And welcome to this day two of our 6 day series, in which we are investigating together, as best we can, the underlying nature of what Krishnamurti simply called what is, which, as we've said previously, cannot actually be expressed or shared in words, but can only be understood or noticed or realized within oneself. Today, we're going to delve into the nature of what Krishnamurti called true meditation. And for true meditation to be, as we've noted previously, the mind must be still. So the activity of mind doesn't displace the natural silence and thereby draw our attention away from the underlying presence of pure awareness onto the content of mind as we go about daily life. When the mind is still, it allows for revelations and insights to spontaneously occur, which then allows love and peace, along with the presence of pure awareness, to come into the foreground of conscious being in daily life, such that one ultimately lives in what might be called an enlightened state of being throughout the day. Learning to live in what might be called a state of true meditation allows for an environment in which spontaneous insight can more readily occur. If not immediately, eventually, but most often when one least expects it, as we increasingly remain open to all possibilities in the eternally present now. But for this to be so, ongoing rather than occasionally, one must be in a relatively constant meditative state, more or less throughout the day. I should also point out that the unveiling process that is being pointed to here throughout this series, that unfolds in the eternally present now, is an evolutionary process. An ongoing rhythmic process, if you will, which means it is exceedingly rare for anyone to be fully present all the time. Much like the ebb and flow of the sea, there is a rhythm, a rhythmic action that brings ever greater clarity to light as the underlying presence and intensity of pure awareness is increasingly revealed. No one, not even one as highly enlightened as Krishnamurti, is in a constant state of meditative state and of intense pure presence. Because true meditation and pure perception only occur when the mind is absolutely still. And for most of us, this is not often so. So before we begin, as before, let's all take a moment, each in our own way. I know I need this right now, to allow the mind to be still, so that as we inquire today into the nature of true meditation, we are resting as much as possible in pure awareness, or what Krishnamurti called choiceless awareness, so that as we listen to his words, the true nature of meditation that lies beyond the capacity of mind to understand in a moment of insight might suddenly be unveiled. It's interesting, I can share with you before we go dive in that, as Ralph said in the beginning, we were embroiled for maybe half an hour in an attempt to get the invitations corrected because they weren't working right. So that it could be a reason why some people are not here today, for instance, because their invitation wasn't working. And so they were resent out, et cetera, and we were working on that. But In speaking about the requirement that the mind to be still, when we're involved in an exercise like that, I can tell you my mind gets active, right? And we're trying to correct the problem, solve the problem, emailing back and forth. And I can find already that I'm not my usual self already in this meeting because my mind is doing this. And so I can report to you, it is so. When the mind is not still, there is a disconcerted movement going on in the body-mind organism that isn't there when we are still, when it's quiet and calm. So I'm having to deal with that right now myself as well. But let's now listen to Krishnamurti's words as he set forth the essential problem that needs to be better understood within ourselves in this way. The fundamental understanding of oneself, this is Krishnamurti speaking now, does not come through knowledge or through the accumulation of experiences, which is merely the cultivation of memory. The understanding of the true nature of oneself is from moment to moment. If we merely accumulate knowledge of the self, that very knowledge prevents further understanding, because accumulated knowledge and experience become the center through which thought focuses and has its being. The word meditation has been corrupted over time. The ordinary meaning of this word is to ponder or consider, to think about, which is trivial and ordinary. In order to understand the true nature of meditation, you need to forget the ordinary meaning of that word, because you cannot measure with words that which is immeasurable. No words can convey it, nor can any system, mode of thought, practice, or discipline bring it about. True meditation is when you begin to quietly feel, he uses the word feel here, not see, but feel, a movement that is not of time. Because this movement has no beginning or end. A movement in the sense of a wave starting from nowhere and with no beach to end it. It is an endless wave. Time has nothing to do with it. If the word meditation in one's mind is about becoming something other than what one already is, or achieving a goal, then the meditative state is rooted in desire, and desire is rooted in mind, and mind cannot go beyond itself. To understand the problem of influence, by this I mean the influence of knowledge and experience, to find out what is true and what is false, and to see the truth in the false, requires tremendous insight, which is a deep inner comprehension of things as they actually are. This entire process that leads to insight and greater understanding is the way of meditation. Meditation is essential to the understanding of life as it actually is. The word life, as used here, includes going to the office every day, as well as quarrels and confrontations we have with each other, and the anxieties and perpetual strains, the deep fears that arise from within, along with the presence of love. All this is life, expressing now. And the process of understanding all of this and of freeing the mind from the constant repetition of self-centered ways is meditation. Meditation is not an intellectual affair. True meditation cannot be learned from another. You must begin without knowing anything and move from the innocence to the innocence. The soil in which the meditative mind can begin is the soil of everyday life, the strife, the pain, and the fleeting joy. It must begin there, and in the process, bring order, and from there, move endlessly. It is like taking a plunge into water, not knowing how to swim. The beauty of meditation is that you never know where you are, or where you are going, or what the end is. True meditation only occurs in the ever-present now. Meditation has nothing to do with achieving a result, nor is it a matter of breathing in a particular way, or looking at your nose, or awakening the power to perform certain tricks. Meditation is not something apart from life, expressing now, in the present moment. When you are driving a car, or sitting in a waiting room, or visiting with others who are chatting aimlessly, or walking by yourself in the woods, or watching a butterfly carried off by the wind. To be choicelessly aware of all that in the present moment is part of meditation. Can there be attention without anything absorbing the mind? Can there be attention without concentrating upon an object? Is there attention without motive? Can the mind give full attention without excluding anything? Surely it can, through a state of pure attention. If you can give full attention without being absorbed in something, and without any sense of exclusion, then you will find out what it is to meditate. Because in that attention, there is no effort, no division, no struggle, no search for a result. Because meditation is a process of freeing the mind from practices and systems of belief and of giving attention without either being absorbed or lost in that which is observed, or making an effort to concentrate. We might call it, this is me speaking now, watchful observation. That's all. In true meditation, there is not only awareness of the outer, of birds in flight, of shadows, of the restless sea, of trees and wind, but also awareness of the psychological processes of mind that bring about inner tension, conflict, anxiety, and all the rest that follows in that movement of time. You do not condemn a bird in flight. You simply observe and see the beauty of it. But when considering your own inner strife, you condemn it, justify it, or deny it. You pretend it's not there. And by doing so, you are not observing the inner conflict, free of thought, without condemnation or justification, just pure observation. True meditation must be totally unconscious, never knowing that you are meditating. If you deliberately meditate, it is another form of desire. The objects of meditation may vary. You might be attempting to reach the highest state, but the motive is the desire to achieve that highest state, much like a businessman wants to successfully achieve, or a builder of a great cathedral. True meditation is a movement without any motive, without words, and the activity of thought getting in the way. It must not be deliberately set about. Only then is meditation a movement of the measureless infinite without a goal. As long as there is an experiencer, a sense of an experiencer, who remembers the experience, truth is not. Truth is not something to be remembered, stored up, recorded, and then talked about at a later time. What is accumulated in the mind is not truth. Desire brings about a false sense of separation of an apparent thinker from the thought, of a thinker that desires to become or to experience, which then creates a sense of division between the experiencer and the experience. Whereas choiceless awareness of the ways of desire is self-knowing. That includes a knowing of how the false sense of self comes into being. This process of self-knowing is the beginning of meditation. Meditation is not only ongoing self-awareness, but is also dissolution of self-centered ways. Without meditation, there is no self-knowing, just as without self-knowing, there is no meditation. So if you are to understand who you truly are in the depths of your being, you must understand the daily process of thought, feeling, and action that arises within yourself. And when you see yourself in action in this way, you might then observe that thought moves from the known to the known to the known. You cannot think about the unknown, for that is merely another thought, and thought cannot approach the unknown. Ramana Maharshi, this is me speaking now, not Krishnamurti, made this same point regarding self-inquiry in one sentence in this way. Self-inquiry is the one infallible means, the only direct one, to realize the unconditioned absolute being that you truly are. So back to Krishnamurti. That which you know is not real because what you know is in time, which means it is generated of mind. And the attainment of knowledge requires time. So to be free from the net of time is the important concern. If one is to be free from the known, the activity of mind and of identifying with thought must come to an end. The mind cannot approach the eternal. Therefore, one must be free of attachments to time to realize that which is eternal. Being present in the here and now does not require time. Only when the mind is completely free from memories of yesterday and projections of tomorrow, is it capable of understanding the eternally present now? One's only concern in meditation, therefore, is to know one's self, not just superficially, but deeply, unsparingly. If one is to understand the whole content and process of our inner consciousness. True meditation is the beginning of wisdom, which is only possible when one understands the true nature of one's own mind and heart. Which brings us to the involvement of the heart and true meditation. This is me speaking now, not Krishnamurti. If you participated in our workshop a couple months ago, you might recall we talked about the fact that the biological brain and heart are literally, as well as esoterically, connected in the body. But when thought, excuse me, but even though they're connected, when the energy outputs of the brain and heart are measured with modern day electronic measuring devices, which is possible, the heart generates electromagnetic signals at amplitudes 40 to 60 times greater than the brain, which is why the aura of the heart typically radiates 10 to 15 feet beyond the body, much more so than the aura of the brain. This is why the movement of compassion is far more powerful than the movement of thought, because compassion emanates from the heart, while thought arises within the brain. So when the movement of compassion arises and we act accordingly, it is far more powerful than when we lecture our kids or our neighbors, for example, about what they should or should not do. This is why to love thy neighbor, as Jesus taught, is far more powerful than to lecture thy neighbor. Because love is of the heart, whereas thought is of mind. Regarding meditation, the heart-brain connection also means that when the heart and brain function coherently together in the harmony with one another, we function with greater intelligence and clarity than when the brain and heart are not in sync. This means that if we are to discover the truth of what is, which includes the truth of who we truly are, it behooves us to remain as much as possible in a coherent state of being, which is likewise a meditative state of mind. So back to Krishnamurti. He says, when the mind is not cultivating memory and is therefore not caught in a constant recycling of memories, as if memory is the center of recognition when it is not, if instead of relating to memories, we are simply aware of everything that is said, as well as everything that arises from within, while in the midst of relationships and activities, and while also in a meditative state, then one sees the truth of life from moment to moment, what is actually occurring now. This is the way of true meditation.